The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix podcast. Tune in today.
Simon Day Takaungawa, and I'm your host. Alice is having her wairua replenished in Fiordland.
Deep in Fiordland, she said.
So she's been replaced today by Leonie Hayden, the editor of Aotea, the Māori and Indigenous content pillar on the Spinoff. Leonie is also a great cook and a very good eater.
Oh yeah.
And as as usual, we have Sophie Gilmore, the food entrepreneur, food boss. What are you? What's on your lectern?
Do you know what? I just never know what you're going to say.
Co-owner of Fedimas.
I'm happy with what he'd be like. Kia ora, Simon.
And we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Freedom Farms. Freedom Farms believes that if you're going to eat meat and eggs, you should know where they come from and how they've been farmed. They make delicious free-range eggs and beautiful pork and bacon, so eat it all the time.
Delish.
So Good Friday or Easter Saturday, which means a lot of you will have been eating a lot of hot cross buns. We have a hot cross bun hater in the house.
Hell
what?
Yeah.
I do not like any kind of sultana, raisin or fruit rind in my food.
Do you like them on their own?
I have had a couple of hot cross buns I didn't despise.
No, I mean like a raisin. Bacon. Would you eat a raisin?
No.
Like when you were
a kid. I don't
kid.
Mind the currant because those are small and chewy.
Yeah.
But the larger that type of dried fruit gets, the slimier it gets.
So no prunes?
I use prunes in cooking.
Yeah. It's different.
It is different.
My mum doesn't like sultanas, and that is the reason she doesn't like hot cross buns, which I think is a real shame because wouldn't you just eat it but pick that bit out?
But it's tainted. It just taints
the
whole thing.
But the dough's got all the yummy spices in it too.
Yeah, I guess it's the spice mix as well.
Yeah, just none of it. It's not your
just
vibe.
None of it. I'm not a fruit toast person, a hot cross bun person. I just don't like that Christmas spice.
Haven't they made
I hate Christmas mince
clove
pies.
Mix.
Hang on. They've made a hot cross bun for people like you, and it's got no fruit in it, and it's got chocolate in it instead. Have you had that one?
I have.
Acceptable?
No, it's just sort of like a subpar bread roll. Yeah, it doesn't taste like chocolate.
Quite puddingy.
Yeah.
So I've come up with a theory on the spot. I think the reason you hate hot cross buns is because they are...
Because I hated my father.
They're the flavour of colonisation in a piece of food.
Oh my God.
It is just, to me, it is a very... British, like European.
Simon's about to ask permission to speak to your inner child.
Yeah. No, I'm picking up what you're putting down, Simon. It is the taste of colonisation. Christmas mince pies can also get in the bin.
Exactly. Cloves on hand.
But they're delicious. Guys, don't make me feel bad.
No, you shouldn't. I really like them too.
I mean, I represent the minority, I'm aware. But I like traditional foods or seasonal foods that represent a holiday.
Right.
I like the idea of that very much.
Do you like butter?
I love butter.
I mean, what I would suggest is that you try and down your next hot cross bun with more butter on it than
yeah.
the bun.
Bread, yeah. Put some spice on your
just
butter.
Just flip the ratios and then you'll be talking.
I mean, I guess so. Then I could just have like a delicious piece of toast with lots of butter on it instead.
Do you reckon that butter sales go up? I'd like to...
Without no doubt.
Oh. Can we hire a fact checker? I'd like someone to phone Faro and find the answer to the question of whether their butter sales go up during hot cross bun season.
Surely. Who's putting margarine on a hot cross bun?
I mean, shouldn't margarine can get in the bin.
Yeah, that's true.
So I actually had a hot cross bun as part of a meeting the other day. I was at Object Space Gallery.
Right there.
On Rose Road, and Sahar Loan served me an award-winning Rangiora Bakery hot cross bun.
Seen a bit of chat about those.
They were delicious. It was like dense and dark and moist, but at the same time being quite light. And I actually had to, though, and this is probably inappropriate.
Okay. How is it dense as well as light?
That you'd have to ask the Rangiora Bakery.
Okay.
So it was like a, you know how you can get a pillow that is both soft yet firm?
Sure. Like a memory foam pillow.
Yeah. This was like
a memory foam.
The hot cross bun equivalent.
And I felt really bad because when Sahar presented my hot cross bun to me, I had to send it back.
Why?
I wanted three times as much butter as she'd put on it.
I had a meeting.
That actually roughs me. Like, don't give me a hot cross bun and not put butter on it. I would rather leave the whole situation.
Yeah. I guess it was a meeting, though, and she was probably just being polite. It's easier to add more butter than it is to, like, take it off.
But I was sitting at the Village the other day, which is our co-working space, and the lawnmower guy comes every 2 weeks. Sam, I organise him, so I know him. I hear him shimmying around with the lawnmower. And I called out, would you like a cup of tea? And he said, no, thank you, I'm all good. And I was like, but would you like a hot cross bun? And then he said, yes. I went inside and opened the fridge and there was no butter. And I just absolutely panicked. And we've only got a tiny lawn. Like, I didn't have time to go and get butter. And I was talking to Louise and she's like, just give it to him anyway without butter. I was like, I don't feel that I can do that. Anyway, I found some raspberry jam and just put shitloads of jam on it and he took it away.
I thought you were going to say you shook up some milk and made some butter.
On the spot. Just found some cream and started shaking it around the room.
I'm going to make Leonie a dry hot cross bun on her birthday.
Oh, God. No, what I was going to say before is because I love a celebration of food, what I make at Easter is a hot cross bunny popo instead.
Oh.
And I even learnt how to pipe the little cross on top. The stuff that they do the piping with is disgusting, by the way. It's just flour, it's water, and shit.
Yeah. Disgusting. That's why everyone likes the Ema ones because they've got custard crosses.
People think they're icing.
Yeah, no.
And they're not. They're just like...
It's just decoration, but in a yuck way. But yeah, I recommend for all of the hot cross bun haters out there, because I know you're out there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few.
Replace it with a bunny popo.
My so what is a bunny popo?
Bunny popo is a delicious, sweet bun enriched with milk and butter that is cooked in a thick coconut sauce.
And it's Samoan.
It's a Samoan dish.
We made those the other day for a wedding that we had at the Village, and it was like this really young couple, and they loved Dominion Road, so we did like Chinese food and dumplings, and we made a bunny popo, and we put pork with it.
Oh, a savoury guy.
Yeah, so like cut them open and...
With the coconut?
Yeah, put pork with them and they were bloody delicious.
Ooh. Like a bunny popo bao bun.
And yeah, totally. And that's like everyone was hammered, which is not why they enjoyed them. I tried one and it was unreal.
But they enjoyed them extra because they were lit.
Yeah, so you can take it both ways.
I think that's
smash
my favourite.
Not having any drinks.
Do you have a recipe that you can... We can have in the little show notes.
Yeah, so the recipe I use was actually posted on CocoNet like 5 or 6 years ago, and I've made it every year since. The spin-off's Madeline Chapman also has become quite the bunny popo expert in the last year or so. She put some up to work the other day. Delicious. She made a vegan one.
Nice.
It was very, very good.
Plant-based milk and olivani. It's delicious.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go back to the wedding.
Yes.
What is your favourite course of wedding food?
The late night snacks at 10:30.
I love it. I love the, like, can it be as even bad as like a Alice and Holst sausage roll?
Yeah, no one cares. Maybe you used to come in like a little brown bag or like a cone with shoestrings and everyone just loses their shit. Like it's the coolest thing they've ever seen.
But I do love the canapés as well.
I was going to say canapés. I love the thought that... goes into that course at weddings these days. Bougie weddings.
Yeah, the canapés that Camille did were amazing. Like sambal fish that she'd made all the sambal and put them on top of little cos leaves, so like a little mini lettucey taco thing. She did like a bunch of prawns that had a mango salsa.
So Camille cooked for her own wedding?
No, not for her wedding. Oh, she did. She did cook a degustation for her own wedding, but she catered the wedding at the Village the other day.
That is such dedication, cooking for your own wedding.
8 courses. She took her apron off, got married, and then apron back on.
Wow.
So we can't really talk about everyone's favourite hot cross buns, can we?
No, but you guys feel free to. You don't mind me. I just talked about mine. It's bunny bobo.
Yeah, actually I like that, and I really like the recipe.
So I think my favourite hot cross bun, after a pretty funny experience at Mian, which is directly below the spin-off, I ordered 2 dozen hot cross bun ahead of Easter without looking at the price.
Oh, my God.
And I, Kerri-Ann owed me $30, so I was like, okay, I get that $30 now. I'm just going to go and get my hot cross buns. So I had $30 cash in my pocket, thinking that would be plenty. And I got charged, well, they cost, and deservedly so. These are the biggest, thickest, you know, hot cross bun you'll find, $75 for. And I remember catching the bus home that night, and I had my little brown paper bag with my hot cross bun, and directly across me on the bus was someone who had 24 hot cross buns for $3. It was just a 2 dozen for $3 sticker on there. It's like, wonder if my hot cross buns are that much better than yours. So now my favorite hot cross buns are supermarket ones.
Right. Well, I was actually at Faro on the way here, which I'm sure we'll get
to. Sorry about that.
But I saw that they make their own hot cross buns, and it was $8.99 for 6. And next to them was the Daily Bread 6, and they were $18.99 for 6. So it's, yeah. It's
there's a real range of hot cross buns out there. Yeah.
But I really, I'll say briefly, there's lots of different types of hot cross bun. I've decided the ones that I like are the lighter ones. So the Wild Wheat hot cross bun is the winner for me. Well, so, I think that the team at Wild Wheat are so clever, and they're quite they've got their own bakeries, but they're quite sort of like fly under the radar, and everything that they do is just, to me, it's because Andrew, who's their head baker, is an owner, he's so obsessed with what he does. You know when people are obsessive, and I love it when you see people just do things with perfection because they're so obsessed,
and they appear to, I can't speak factually to it, have found a way to make artisan bread sort of profitable and get it into the far corners to be sold. Like at the worst supermarket in the world, which is Titirangi Super Value, they have Wild Wheat bread, and that's about the only great thing that they have. Other than they sell their like decaying bananas for 50 cents, and I buy those and put them in the freezer. But they sell Wild Wheat out there, and it's available in lots of places. Lots of restaurants use it.
I mean, I'm sure they'd like it to be more profitable than it is, but that's just food in general.
I would buy more of their Kumara sourdough, but I'm not sure I can physically eat more than I already eat of their Kumara sourdough.
It's so delicious, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
So we're going to not even try to do a meaningful segue, and we're going to just start talking about wasabi, because...
Why? Tell me why.
Because I didn't know that the wasabi you get at the vast majority of sushi joints isn't wasabi, and I learned this because of a story that is either live now or going to be live at 5 a.m. on Saturday morning on the spinoff.co.nz, because we have a really buzzy wasabi farmer in Canterbury who's doing the real thing. Tell it, Sophie, you explain to me what the wasabi you get at most shops is.
So I've got some here that I bought at Faro, and it's this is wasabi powder, which is the same thing that we buy, like mustard powder. You add water, mix it up to your desired consistency. But the interesting thing about this is that it's not wasabi at all. It's horseradish with food colouring in it. And that is the case for all of the mainstream cheap wasabis that you see in the world. And I think that it's because it's difficult to grow and it's expensive as well. So I'm holding a little mini jar, and it's a tin, and it looks like it's quite cute, quite a shrunken tin of wasabi powder, and it looks like, it feels like it's just mustard powder, but it's green and you can get it at Faro. And I don't know why you'd prefer to have this dehydrated than you would in the tube, but maybe that's just how some people prefer to roll.
Maybe longer shelf life.
Yeah.
So Fenton Wood is the man behind the New Zealand wasabi farm.
Well, he is on a first-name basis with the maitre d' at Kokoro.
You would be, right?
And are they the only ones that grow the wasabi root? What's it called?
It has a Latin name. It is called like wasabi japanasi or something. Hold on.
But what's the one that starts with R? There's a name for the...
rhomboid or something.
Yes,
the rhizome root.
R-H-I-Z-O.
Oh, you're right.
I-Z-O-M-E.
Wasabi japonica rhizome.
So what he said is that for...
Who's he?
This is the general manager at Kokoro, where I went before I came here. He said that his head chef got wind that Fenton was growing fresh wasabi, and there's some sort of restriction on how you can provide it to people, and I'm not sure why that is, but you can see on the purewasabi.co.nz website that you can't just buy it. So he said his head chef spent about 3 years trying to convince Fenton to sell it to him direct, and now they buy it from him direct and they grate it at the table for their guests.
Wow.
So I went to Kokoro for my birthday dinner, for my 40th birthday in February.
Cool.
And had the degustation and had the wasabi grated at the table, and it's delicious.
It's so different. I'm just eating it right
so
now.
So different.
It is the very citrusy and fresh. It still has that like clean burn.
God, I just put so much in my mouth.
No, but you'll be all right. It's not as intense as the fake green English hot mustard, you know?
And the only other wasabi fact I know is that capsaicin's oil soluble, which is why they burn your mouth for such a long time unless you drink milk or whatever. But this family is water soluble, so burns Sophie's just for that... brief moment, but then your saliva just neutralizes it.
Oh, buzzy. Because I worked at a modern Japanese Australian fusion restaurant. Sophie, you okay?
That was quite a big bit. I just put a whole lot of wasabi in my mouth. It is, I agree with what Leonie just described, though. It's not still burning.
Her eyes are watering, though. So I worked at this Japanese restaurant in Melbourne. And the way these amazing Japanese chefs would create a decorative flower out of the wasabi was so incredible, except when someone just thought it was like an edible flower. And I got to this guy's table.
Oh, wow.
Just as he had deposited the largest piece of wasabi into his mouth. And I was, you know, doing the old, are you enjoying your meals? And this guy's like writhing in his chair. Looks like he's on a real intense acid trip or something. Just like fully losing the plot. And I thought I was going to have to call an ambulance.
It's like your eyes water and your nose water and everything, doesn't it?
But then he came right. And I guess that's the benefit of the water solubility.
He would have been on a high afterwards as well.
He'd have some intense heartburns.
Yeah, that's actually what I just got a little bit of. But now we're going to try the Kokoro Wasabi. So they do a remix by mixing the New Zealand Fenton's Wasabi.
Pure Wasabi.
Purewasabi.co.nz with one that they import from Japan, which is a paste, I believe. And he said that the reason they do that is that the New Zealand one has more kind of depth of flavour. So it's more aromatic. And the one from Japan has more heat, so they want a combo of it.
Because that is, like, it is full on, but it didn't have that same horseradish vibe for
me. No, but an interesting flavour that I haven't really tasted before, because I think
but
I've
just been
But can't
you see how it would be so much better with fish? I think I want to put hot English mustard, even if you have put food colouring in it, on my steak. You know, that's a big... brave, robust flavour that can stand up to that. And I think what is really interesting and exciting about what we just tried, it's more subtle, it's softer and more delicate and perfectly designed for fish. Wow, Leonie's having one of those trip outs.
Yeah. Wow, but so the mixture of the Japanese and the New Zealand
together, that's what they consider together to be the perfect
It is much
thing.
Hotter. But it was a lot sweeter than the Pure New Zealand.
They've also gifted us some sashimi, so perhaps we should stop eating wasabi on its own and eat it with what it's intended to be eaten with.
This is most likely delicious. Beautiful fish from Lee Fisheries, which is a provider of Kokoro.
Nice.
Kia ora, my name's Duncan Grieve, and I'm managing editor at The Spinoff. This podcast, like so much of the work we do at The Spinoff, is made possible by the support of our members. To find out more about The Spinoff members and how you can help us keep producing quality, independent journalism, visit members.thespinoff.co.nz today.
Another thing that I thought was interesting, he said that there are different regions in Japan that grow different varieties of wasabi. And so then I'm like, okay, well, everyone in Japan's just only having their favourite type of wasabi. And he said, no, it's kind of the top sushi joints will specify what kind of wasabi they want. But the general public in Japan even don't realise that there's a bunch of different varieties, and they don't also necessarily realise that the one that they buy every day in the tube or in the dried form is not wasabi at all. It's horseradish.
Oh.
Buzzy.
Yeah. We've all been had.
Yeah, exactly. Yum.
And we kind of fuck sushi up in the way we eat it in New Zealand, right?
Yeah, I don't think we're very good at it.
So the third one is just our bog standard horseradish, dyed green horseradish.
Should we
try that one on its own, seeing as we tried the other two on their own?
I reckon this will be real hot. I reckon this is Coleman's hot English mustard. Dyed green and put through a piping tube.
Look at that fish. It's just like an art.
It looks beautiful.
Delicious.
That's, as far as takeaway shop wasabi goes, that's very light. Almost flavourless. I think that's like a...
maybe it got dehydrated 45 years ago.
It's more like horseradish cream almost. It's so mellow.
Oh, really?
When you have the pretend one next to real ones, they don't even taste the same.
Yeah.
They just taste like horseradish.
Like apples and oranges.
And now we know that wasabi doesn't actually taste like horseradish.
Yeah. Weirdly. It tastes like wasabi.
It tastes like its own gig.
So big shout out to Fenton Wood, Pure Wasabi, and to Chef Makoto and the team at Kokoro for hooking us up with some incredible sashimi and for looking after Leonie so well on her 40th birthday.
Oh, yeah. It was a very special night, actually.
It's such a beautiful
Japanese
restaurant.
Champagne.
Oh, my God, that sounds like such a special
thing to do. 9 courses. Not going to lie, I was quite ill afterwards. Not obviously because the food was gorgeous, but I ate so much that I made myself ill.
I used to do that every birthday. I'd demand as a little boy that we go to Shahi Indian restaurant. It's my favourite place. And as like a 9-year-old, I'd eat so much Indian food that I'd have to go down and lie on the street. And you just find me on Parnell Rise outside this Indian restaurant trying to pull myself together on the ground.
Wow, that's commitment. But also,
I'm a committed eater.
I ate a degustation last week and I've just decided does anyone actually enjoy eating like that?
If it's done well, I love it.
I don't want 5 plates of food and they're all rich and they've all got some sort of jus on them. It's just annoying.
I think it's the richness that is the biggest issue with most degustation.
Why don't they put some more acidity on the plate then?
Yeah, because people don't eat in those quantities with that richness. Like I could eat something that's just salads and vegetables or whatever in that quantity till the cows come home. Everyone could. But 5 different meals with like some kind of cream or meat sauce with them. It's
well,
too much.
But also I think it is too much. And aren't we moving away from having huge amounts of meat? Like the one that I had was actually delicious, but it went from a plate with duck on it to a plate with beef on it.
Yeah.
I was like, you've just given me 2 plates of red meat. That's just a lot of food.
David would love it.
Yeah, he ate the rest of it.
Sophie's husband's family likes to serve their meals as veg and 3 meat.
Yeah. They are New Zealand's biggest sausage family.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is you know how at university every meal, or when you first start flatting, every meal is served with like a loaf of white bread that everyone butters. David's family, every meal is served with sausages.
And they talk about sausages too. Like, are you bringing sausages? I've got sausages. There's sausages in the freezer.
Always sausages.
Should we have some sausages tonight? I'm like, we've had sausages every day.
But just quickly in defense of David, I'm the world's biggest sausage fan.
They're
after the
so
home
delicious.
Show, love sausage. Love sausages.
I just don't want them every day, but I do love a sausage as much as the next person. I hope you're listening to this, Ben Douglas.
But you also, Leonie, just caught my sausage, my passion for the sausage. Segway.
I'm not going to sausage shame you.
To something slightly more serious. Today, the minimum wage went from $18.90 to $20 an hour. And obviously hospitality is at the forefront, the frontier of the people that's going to fit, both from people getting paid and businesses having to work out how to make that money. Sophie, I know you tried really hard to pay the living wage at Bird on a Wire, but it it literally burns a hole in the business, right?
Yeah, but the living wage is now pretty close to the minimum wage. So back when we paid it, it was, I think, minimum wage was $16 and the living wage was $21.70. So we were paying the staff that reached that level. Like, our goal was to get everyone there, but they had to jump through a bunch of training and experience and, you know, those kind of hoops to get there. But when we did that, we were paying $5 an hour above minimum. So the new minimum wage is $20, and the living wage has been amended to $22.10. So we're about to launch a new kind of wage regime for the team at Fatima's. And in the same sort of vein, we are aiming to get all of our trained staff onto a living wage. It's really not easy in hospitality, and it's also tricky because the living wage is basically deemed to be what someone needs to live in New Zealand, provide for a family, etc., etc. And we've got a bunch of spoilt teenagers that live with their parents and don't show up to work if they don't feel like it because they're a bit hungover. And it's really hard to say everybody deserves the same thing here because some people have got bills to pay and some don't. And then that's not to say that it brings into question a lot of stuff. Like, if they're doing the same job, should they be paid the same rate? And also, if they're doing the same job in hospitality, they're not actually of the same value to you, because a good staff member can do twice the work of someone that's hopeless or not progressing. So part of the thing that I'm trying to do is say we support the minimum wage going up, and I think the fallout will be that the hospitality industry will have to put their prices up. But as part of the staff sort of participating in that, we're trying to design a program that says we want to take you with us onto the living wage, and what we need you to do is understand our perspective on some things. And we just like made like a little report card thing that we'll be assessing people against. So it's time in the job for sure, but some of them just think that because they've been there for 6 months they should get a pay rise. But the problem with that is that that particular staff member might be constantly looking for cover. And, you know, so it's, we've done reliability, flexibility, progress, attitude, a couple of other things maybe. And if you pass all of that, you go from the minimum wage to the living wage. No, from $20.50, which is going to be our new
But entry. I think that's reflective of traditional workplaces. You don't just get a pay rise because you get a pay rise. You sit down and have a performance review, and you justify to your bosses why you deserve more. You know, minimum wage is the minimum. You don't, unless you're earning it, you're not,
yeah.
You know, you shouldn't expect to progress. But Leonie and I talked about this before. I'm happy to pay $5 for a coffee, to pay $15 for my shawarma. I want to see restaurant as places where staff can be there for a long time, so the whole experience is better for everyone.
Yeah, I know, and I think that the issue with that is the businesses that buy into that, which is lots of us, right? Like, I feel totally enthusiastic about that, but in the short term, it's just going to see us go into negative profitability. Yeah. So I just think it's a matter of how you control that and how you cope with that and what your game plan is. Because it's like you're putting a leap of faith into people, right? You're saying, I'll pay you more, but I'm really hoping that we'll get some more value out of you too. But it's not, a lot of like our team don't even, like they don't engage with emails or, you know, like you've got a lot of different ongoing issues with staff that are not resolved by paying them more, for sure.
Mm. And it is hard. The idea that working at Fatima's for 20 years is a cool, viable thing doesn't exist yet.
Mm.
And so you are still going to be seen as this place where people, you know, restaurants and bars are going to be seen as a place where you work while you're at university or you're finishing school to have a little bit more cash, to have a few more beers on the weekend.
Yeah, well, that's one of the hard things about hospitality is that our staff are transient. So then ordinarily, like we've got someone that's working with us at the moment that I think is epic, and we've said, do you want to be a manager? And she's like, oh, no, because I'm moving to Canada soon. Aww. And I was like, but you're awesome. And you will take those skills with you to Canada. And wouldn't it be nice to have, like, to go along with a reference that says, hey, I got asked to be a manager and I stood up to the challenge and I, you know, it's also more cash for Canada. So I kind of don't get it. There's definitely, like, people that don't see what I see, which is that whatever you're doing now will form part of whatever you do next. It's like they think it's separate. And I think that there's lots of young people too that, like, we're taking on heaps of novice workers, which means that when I'm training someone that's never worked in hospitality before, it's not me just training them. It's me taking another person off the roster. So it's like they cost you twice because they're there and the other person that's got to train them there, and that person's got to be replaced because they need to be focused on the training. So, yeah, I think it's complicated for sure.
But I do think we're going to see prices rise around the whole industry.
I would like restaurants to be supported if that's what they need to do to survive, for sure. I mean, I can bang on until the cows come home, but there are no restaurants running, laughing all the way to the bank. It's just not a thing anymore. The margins are... Our food costs have gone up hugely in the last few years as well. So the margin that was there is just getting tighter and tighter. So if someone puts their prices up, it's because they want to keep serving you. So I think it should be supported.
Well, I support it, and I hope dietary requirements listeners are keen to support it too and will not affect their eagerness to get out and about in the New Zealand hospitality scene if that happens.
Yeah, same.
We're going to talk about peanut butter, but I think we'll do that next time. I really wanted to talk about how Lord loves my white chocolate and miso butter.
Oh, my God. I believe you've mentioned that before. Would you like to just bring it up again, or are we having a whole episode about
it? Well, so I grew up with the Jewel family. I know Roman Jewel.
I thought you meant you grew up with Jewel, the country singer?
No. No, I wish. No, I only found out yesterday that he was behind Fix and Fog. This person that I have known since I was a child.
Really awesome interview with Roman Jewel, the CEO of Fix and Fog, on Business is Boring. Go listen to that, and we'll talk about peanut butter next time. I'll bring in some of my peanut butter that Lord really likes.
Oh my God.
Did I mention that?
I'll be looking forward to it, Simon.
We are into like the third season of the podcast. Surely I've run out of all my stories. So we're just going to go back and recycle
everything. I actually asked her if she liked your peanut butter, and she said no. So
She chased me down in the street and asked for more.
I'd rather talk about her singing on stage with Marlon Williams at the one night that I wasn't there.
Did you go to multiple nights?
No. Oh. Thanks, everyone.
Kia ora Tina for looking after us today. Shout out to Haz Beats on our theme music. I paid for that out of my own pocket because I didn't want to listen to another just audio library theme song. Jane Yee, the spin-off's executive producer. Go join the spin-off members so you can keep good journalism alive.
Woohoo!
Ka kite.
Happy Easter.
Hello for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi. Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spin-off. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spin-off member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spin-off Podcast Network.